Welcome, movie fans. Thanks for joining us for episode 91 of Reading Between the Reels, the premier podcast of Americans portraying English icons. If you're a new listener, we're so glad you found us. And if you've been enjoying the show, please tell someone about us. Post on X or Facebook, write a review in your favorite podcast catcher, or just recommend the show to a friend. I'm Craig Dickinson. I'm joined tonight by my co-host, Justin Eldon. Corey Hatchman's out, but we'll be back soon. How's it going, Justin?
Pretty good. Please, if you enjoy it, tell a friend. Craig doesn't let us eat unless we get so many listens.
Some of us have been a little hungrier than others. Anyway, what are we talking about tonight, Justin? Help me out here. What are we doing?
We are talking about Sherlock Holmes, released in 2009, led by Robert Downey Jr.
I've always been a huge fan of Robert Downey Jr. And then he wins the Oscar and wanted to do a Downey movie. And this is one that I really like. And also, it's directed by Guy Ritchie, who's, of course, doing the upcoming Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. So I thought that kind of fit together nicely for what we're talking about tonight. And
that's a nice little cross section there.
Right. What do you think about the movie? Overall thoughts on Sherlock Holmes?
Overall thoughts. So let's go into some backstory so audience knows where I'm coming from. There was a period where I didn't watch any movies for 2 years. I was on a mission for my church. So from 2007 to 2009, I had not seen a single movie. I was not aware of any movies that came out. You just kind of like shut yourself off for those 2 years, like a monk or a nun or a... Yeah. So in 2009, end of 2009, I started watching movies again once I finished my mission for my church. And it was like you had some real amazing movies in that era. You had this one. You had Star Trek, which I know is divisive. Like some people don't like that movie. I liked it because I'm not a Trekkie. You had Dark Knight Returns. What were some other ones? There were some amazing movies that came out in that time. Oh, Iron Man. Obviously.
The beginning of the MCU.
And yeah. And I was just so confused. I'm like, oh my goodness, movies got so good. What happened in the time that I was gone? And this, like, even watching it now, like, sometimes I watch movies during that time period now, and I'm like, okay, it's not as good as I remember, because I was kind of, like, starved for entertainment. This movie completely holds up. Holy cow, I think this movie has only gotten better with age. I don't think anything really went out of style in terms of like the dialogue or the directing or the acting or anything. Like this whole movie, start to finish, is just really, really well done. Obviously, Robert Downey Jr. carries this thing. Like, he is the heart and soul of this movie. I think this probably would have been forgotten if it wasn't Robert Downey Jr. Like, it probably would have done pretty well, but then no one really would have cared to see it again, or it wouldn't still be in today's, it wouldn't be as culturally relevant, I should say, if it wasn't for Robert Downey Jr. And then, obviously, just the chemistry between him and Jude Law is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Robert Downey Jr. probably could have just been fine on his own, but both of those actors like portray this particular version of Sherlock and Holmes just so well. And we've seen so many iterations of them, but this one is fantastic.
Yeah, I love that you brought up the Jude Law thing too, because there was a point where Jude Law had, like, he was the guy, he was the it guy, and he was like five movies a year or something ridiculous. He was a big leading actor right around this time. So for him to kind of take a supporting role, which I think is also interesting, as, you know, an English guy playing second fiddle to an American playing an English guy, is also kind of an interesting dynamic. But I remember this was a little bit controversial, obviously, because you had Downey playing Sherlock Holmes. And then also this is not, I mean, just aesthetically, right? He's not wearing the deerstalker hat. Right, that was like, you could tell right away that they were going to go away from that. That you're going to have slow motion fights and just a lot of the cinematography, which we'll talk about. It doesn't look like a Sherlock Holmes movie, but it's actually, when you dig in, because I had read a lot of Sherlock Holmes when I was younger and enjoyed a lot of it. And it's actually, this is actually fairly true to the books. They're kind of expanding on certain things that were just only hinted at, but it's not, you know, it doesn't like break canon or anything, which it kind of, I think a lot of people were, you know, this doesn't look like something from the BBC. And so therefore it's, maybe it's not authentic or traditional or whatnot. But I think it actually did, but it ended up having a really good response once people actually got in and saw that it was its own thing, and, but still fit with, you know, within the established canon. Another thing I just thought was really interesting was that it's not an origin story. And I know that's that, like, this is around the time too where you're getting Star Trek in 2009. You had Batman Begins a few years earlier. You had, they did this with Bond, right? And then, but this is actually kind of the end of their partnership, at least initially. That's kind of how it looks. And I thought that was kind of an interesting take.
Yeah, it's like an older, more seasoned Holmes. Yeah. So I've only ever read one Sherlock short book, novel, whatever. And yeah, I would agree. I didn't think about that. It doesn't really break canon. It does make him quite a bit more action hero-y than he seems to be portrayed otherwise, but I think it lends itself pretty well to film. Like, I don't think anyone was complaining about that, because those are some of the best scenes, yeah. Especially when we can get more into this in cinematography, but especially when he's slowing down the fights and explaining the fights and then actually acting on his like calculations. That is, oh, that's so good. So good.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and jump in then to cinematography. What are some of the things that you noticed? Composition, color, camera work.
Okay. So camera work, let's talk about the fights, I guess. Probably going to be a chunk of this. Apparently the term for, Guy Ritchie's way of doing these fights where he will slow things down and then speed things up. Apparently it's called the slow motion speed ramp. I've never heard that, but I guess that's what the internet's calling it. And I think it's such a wonderful way because, okay, you watch a movie, let's say The Bourne Identity. You watch a movie and they're hitting, they're punching, and you're like, oh, that's cool. Oh, that takes a lot of skill. But at the end of the fight scene, you don't really know what's going on. You like, obviously that person, you can assume in the realm of that world, has trained and practiced, but you don't really get to like appreciate that, I guess. And doing it this way, where he calculates out all of his moves, you can see his own genius, and then you can see him execute it, and it goes, you get like a slow-mo version, and then you get a normal speed version, or maybe it's even sped up a little bit. I just love it. It's such a fantastic way of doing that, and at the same time showing his brilliance. So much so that when the movie Ender's Game came out, when did that come out? 2013, 4 years later. I remember going to see the movie Ender's Game, and I love the books. Like, I've read a ton of the books multiple times. Fantastic. I was so excited for the movie. And then in Ender's Game, I was like, oh, they better do the Sherlock thing. Like, his brain should work like Sherlock's brain.
Absolutely.
And they didn't, and I was so disappointed. And that was like an impossible thing for me to require of them. But just the fact that they didn't do that in the movie, I'm like, nah, I'm not on board with this movie. Simply because they didn't copy Sherlock Holmes is bad for other reasons. But no, his ability to like keep the audience engaged while also showing character development in a fight scene is amazing. I absolutely love it. Like, I was hooked from the first 5 minutes, just knowing that we're going to get more of those fights. They're awesome.
Yeah, that was, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I remember when I saw the trailers for that, that was a thing. I was like, what, you just turn him into an action hero? Like, that's not who Sherlock Holmes is. But when they do show he's really good at fighting because of how smart he is and how observant he is, I thought that was just a brilliant masterstroke. And then to do that with the camera work, to watch, we're zooming in here, this is specifically what he's looking at. So you kind of get to vicariously see it through, you know, his eyes. I thought was just really, really smart. A couple of things I wanted to point out, composition-wise, there's some interesting things that I've seen this movie several times, but looking for, you know, this time through, I noticed some different things. When Holmes visits Blackwood in prison, there's a couple of parallel close-ups that happen. And so it's a close-up on Blackwood's face, and then Holmes is just kind of out of focus over his shoulder. And the way I read that is that Blackwood's completely self-absorbed, because he is. Like, Holmes is just almost like just a little annoyance there. And that he sees the world through this distorted viewpoint. And then they flip it around, which I thought was also really interesting, that Blackwood's over his shoulder as he's predicting the further murders. And kind of he's out of focus. And so it's kind of interesting that, like, and he's telling Holmes, like, there's nothing you can do to stop this. So it's not clear what's about to happen, as Blackwood's not clear behind Holmes. So I thought that was kind of a cool flip-flop of the setups, and with clearly intentionality behind them.
And the film, in a lot of subtle ways, because Blackwood doesn't actually have a whole lot of screen time. So they have to characterize him pretty quickly in the short amount of time he's on screen. And they do that really well, like, Craig, what you're saying with, like, the camera work and in and out of focus. But also, one of the first introductions to him, and I think they actually do this twice, if maybe three times, I wasn't sure in my notes, but they kind of, like, zoom in on a snaggletooth a little bit,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, right off the bat, good guys don't have crooked teeth. You don't see that, even in London.
Sorry to our English listeners.
Oh, yeah. I hope we don't have any English.
Yeah, it's a stereotype.
We don't anymore, fine. That's for sure. Wait, that's not how that's not how that works. Anyway, so they like zoom in on his tooth a couple different times. But they also, when he moves around, especially at the beginning, where as the audience, you're still questioning, is he supernatural or not? They have like a beast snarl as he moves, like a every time, but like it's quicker and more sped up than that. But you quickly get the sense that this guy's creepy and weird and quite possibly supernatural, which is, I guess, the whole premise of the movie is Holmes is trying to disprove any sort of supernatural activity.
Yeah, they go right up to the line in a couple of things, right? Because if you don't know Sherlock Holmes, you're thinking, oh, this is going to be something supernatural. But you're like, no, he's always disproven stuff, you know, out of the Baskervilles all the way back. That it looks like it's going to be that way. And had they gone a supernatural way, that would have been issues. It's an issue. Some other things I really liked, the color, I'm a Snyder fan, so I like desaturated, which this film has a lot of that, you know, but yeah. It's 19th century London. That's going to look like that. It's dirty and dingy.
It's going to be dirty. It's going to be gross.
Some deep shadows. Love that. Except for Irene Adler is very colorful. She's like the one character that kind of stands out. She's got like that deep blue coat and this dark pink dress. And so I thought that was, she's an American too. So I think that's some very intentional color choices there. Very noticeable, obviously.
I didn't like, speaking of shadows, Moriarty, which they do say his name at the end, right?
Yeah, at the very end, you get to know
who he is. Find it at the very end, yeah. So Moriarty, he was shadowed, obviously, like, intentionally.
Yeah.
I thought it was almost to the point where it was distracting. Like, the inside of a carriage should not be that dark. I understand we want to, like, cover his face and stuff, but to me it was distracting. I wish it would have been done a little bit better. Like, maybe you just saw a little bit of his face, but it was a little much for me. It was a little distracting.
Gotcha. A couple other things I just want to point out real quick, just camera work. I really liked the fight with Dredger, the huge French guy. Where you have this great mix of high and low angles, like extreme, to really emphasize the hugeness of him and the difference in their sizes. And then when the chase scene happens, that there's this like it's an upside down angle, and then it swings around all the way through, which is pretty great. And the last thing I had was, it's actually part of that fight too. There's so much in that fight. It's just amazing. The quick following shots of the electric current traveling along when he hits the little, like, the cattle prod thing.
Oh yeah!
Watch it, bing, 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 and then it hits him. But which is just that kind of
stuff. I love how excited he is. Like, in the middle of the fight, he's fighting for his life, and he's just excited that thing is like, ooh, technology I've never encountered before. This is great.
Yes.
I just looked up the height difference. So Robert Downey Jr. is 5'8". That is surprising. And guy that plays Dredger, Robert Malley, I think is how you pronounce that, is 6'11". Wait, ooh, that can't be right.
Sure.
That is right. 6'11". Holy cow. That guy's huge.
Wow. I didn't realize that either. But so, yeah, but he looks like he's like 9 feet tall in that fight.
Camera work, but no. Yeah.
I mean, some of it is, but yeah, he's just naturally
I just
huge.
Love in that fight, too, how polite they are to each other. He's like, no, take your time. And they're gentlemanly.
He's literally going to kill him. But yeah, it is kind of striking how nice they are.
I like it.
Let's go ahead and move on to sound. First thing I want to mention right off the bat is that this had an Oscar nomination for the score. Hans Zimmer does. And again, I love Hans Zimmer. I checked this out today. It lost to Michael Giacchino's Up, which is a fantastic score. So I don't feel too bad.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I know. Both were the worthy selections. What are some things you liked about the sound in this film, though, Justin?
Oh, obviously the score. Like that score, I don't know what instrument that is. It's like
out of tune almost. Piano. It's an out of tune piano.
Is that no? I thought that was like a stringed instrument.
Well, that pianos are stringed. Pianos are stringed instruments.
Well, I know, but I mean like more traditional. Shut up, Craig. I know.
Well, there's traditional strings in there too. There's like violin and stuff. But the main title
it just adds to like what the main title is stringed or is it out of tune piano? Which is
I think it's out of tune piano.
Oh, okay, interesting. Well, that's good to know. I was also in watching it. I had to rewatch a couple of scenes because I feel super bad for the sound and Foley guys having to keep up with Robert Downey Jr. because he's so fidgety with everything. He's constantly grabbing things and like moving them around and he's like shuffling his feet and just, you know, he makes use of like his actor's physical space and to try and like record all the sounds that he would be making must have just been such a pain. But they did such a fantastic job. So good job, whoever did that.
Yeah. I really liked a couple of things with sound effects. The punches sounding I liked a lot. And the ears ringing kind of distorted sound as the bullet barely misses Holmes in that opening scene. But kind of the lack of sound a couple of times. There's also when when Watson sets off Blackwood's explosion, that little booby trap thing. And it's this heavy violin that comes in and you don't really. Like you hear an explosion just barely in the background. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that whole scene, as well as the part before that when they're in the warehouse and you're hearing those pigs be like chainsawed in half. Oh, yeah. I don't know how they make that squelching noise, but it made me want a Baconator like really bad. I just wanted to like squeeze a Baconator after that.
I have to mention also the Dubliners song, The Rocky Road to Dublin, playing during the boxing match, which starts before you see the boxing match and then plays through it a little bit and then plays at the end, which absolutely brings you directly into, somebody's going to get their butt kicked there. Then there's also when that fight in the lab, which we've talked about a little bit before, it almost sounds like a dance with the way that the fiddle's playing, which, they're trying to kill each other, but it's fun. The same time.
Yeah.
Keeps it light.
Yeah. It that scene where like we said, when Holmes first gets that like cattle prod type thing, the noises that thing makes just in general, and it punctuates a lot of the music in the background as well. So perfectly. And it just you're having a good time, so Holmes is having a good time. Dredger is having less than a good time, but he's still being, you know, respectful about it. It's just fun. It's fun. It's a fun movie.
And then for vocal sounds, I mean, the first thing I had was just how Holmes narrates his fights before they happen to kind of clue us in on what's going to happen. Then you get to see it, which the payoff of it is just brilliant because you're like, I'm going to be looking for those things. And like I said, it's slow-mo during the narration part, and then you see it at regular or even the faster speed, and you have to kind of follow it. There's a couple other things too. I like there's when he's trying to solve the mystery after Watson's blown up, he can kind of hear all the voices of past clues. You get to hear some past dialogue, which is kind of cool. Again, kind of
so
bringing us into his mind. Yeah.
This is a little bit of a beef I had with the movie. You kind of find out at the very end of the movie all of the clues that he found, and clues that seemingly he was just walking through a room, and as a viewer, I would not have been aware of many of those things unless they were pointed out to me. So I kind of wish the movie would have taken me along for the ride at the moment instead of just telling me at the end, the last like 5-10 minutes. Because there's a lot of scenes where it's like, oh, I didn't know I was supposed to be looking for clues. And like, he has a lot of flashbacks and things like that to explain when he's explaining the clues. But on the first viewing, there wasn't a whole lot of payoff. Like, it was kind of like, ah, darn it. Okay. I didn't know that's what I was supposed to be doing. On subsequent viewings, it's a little bit better because you can kind of remember, oh, I see what he was talking about before or whatever it may be. So I do wish he would have spent some time explaining as he went along, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, and you also have him at the end when he's talking to Blackwood and telling Blackwood how he knows how he survived. And then they show the visuals with that one, which I think is really
helpful. Yeah. But I guess in the moment I would have liked to, like,
yeah.
For example, when he's explaining like the burial site, the tomb he was in.
Yeah.
Like, we see him lick the stone, mm-hmm. and then later he tells us, oh, it was glue made of this, this, and this. Tell us at the time. I would have liked to have known it at the time. But
yeah. I will say that I had misremembered how that reveal had happened. And so I was watching, expecting him to say something about it. About the how like the honey and whatever had sealed that back up again. So I get what you're saying, because I'm like, oh, it would have made sense here. My brain was like, this is the scene where he tells us that. But he doesn't tell us until the end. He's kind of holding mm-hmm. all of those cards against his chest until the very end. So, yeah, I totally get that.
Well, and I kind of understand, like, okay, maybe they want to go the route of you're, as an audience member, they want you still guessing whether or not this is supernatural.
Mm, yeah.
But everyone knows that's not what Sherlock Holmes is about. So just, I don't know, be upfront with us, I suppose. Another example of that would be when he is in the office with Coward, and he takes off the handcuffs and like slides the handcuffs to him, and then later you find out that the inspector gave him the key. Why don't you just show us that from the get-go, or not show us at all? Like, I think we can all assume Holmes can pick a lock. Like,
yeah, I didn't need to see the inspector giving him a key. Yeah, that felt extraneous to me. But
yeah,
he had to get the key. I would have. Yeah, he's wily enough to figure
it out. Yeah, I don't think anyone would bat an eye. How did he get the handcuffs off? It's like, we know how he can do that. We saw him picking a lock earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Anything else you want to say on sound, or should we move down to performance and specifically dialogue?
I don't think so. I think a lot of it was just like, yeah, the narration, voiceover. We talked about the cattle prod. No, let's move on.
All right. Okay. Do you have a favorite line or two of dialogue that you want to throw out?
Can I mix this up a little bit and go on a little bit of a ramp?
Do it, rant? Dude.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Mary, the actress that plays Mary.
Kelly Riley, yes. From Yellowstone. Yellowstone, come on.
I hate her in Yellowstone, too. I hate her.
How do you hate Beth? What's wrong with you?
I hate her stupid face.
She's amazing.
Something about the way she talks and looks.
She's insane. But this is like her without the with her normal accent, because she's British.
Nah, like her unfair confidence. Nope, don't like her. Don't like her one bit.
Sorry, Kelly Riley fans.
I'm already a little jaded. I don't feel like she did a very good job. I think Jude Law can do better. But wow. That scene in the restaurant,
yes,
where
love that scene.
She asks him, she asks Sherlock, oh, do your deductive reasoning thing on me. And then he does it, mm-hmm. and then she gets mad about it.
Yeah.
Like, no, you asked him. You don't get to throw a wine in his face. He did the thing you wanted him to do. He just made a mistake.
Yeah.
Don't like that. And I blame the actress specifically.
Kelly Riley. Yeah. I remember seeing Yellowstone and going, oh, that's the lady from Sherlock Holmes, because that was the main thing that I had seen her.
Yeah, I remember seeing Yellowstone and going, where do I know her ugly mug from?
Oh, good Lord. Okay. Not a fan of Kelly Riley is just...
No,
okay.
Not a fan.
Okay. Well, I'm going to throw out a line of dialogue while you're thinking of one that you can throw out. This is one, is it the first conversation? I think it's the first one with Irene, but anyway. Irene says, why are you always so suspicious? And Sherlock says, should I answer chronologically or alphabetically?
I said that to a student today.
Did you really?
I'm not even kidding.
Oh, man, that's a great one.
Mr. Eldon, can I sit by my friend? No. Well, why not? Well, I don't trust you anymore. Why not? Should I answer chronologically or alphabetically? And the joke failed because the student didn't know what chronologically meant. But I thought it was funny.
Eighth graders.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
as soon as I heard that, I'm like, oh, I'm going to use that on somebody.
Oh, I got to store that away. Yeah, that's a good one. Any others?
So there are a lot. Sherlock Holmes says so many good one-liners, and it's like repeating them aren't even any good because the way he says them. So I'm going to say this one without his wonderful delivery. But the line right after he is done like practicing the dark arts, like going through the process as if he would, as if Lord Blackwood would. He says, my journey took me somewhat further down the rabbit hole than I intended, and though I dirtied my fluffy white tail, I have emerged enlightened. Like, he's just so...
I had that one too. It's so good. Here's one. Here's another one that you can kind of use with students. This is when they get to Blackwood's tomb. It's broken open. He's talking to Lestrade. What are the coffin, Lestrade? And Lestrade says, "Well, we are in the process of bringing it up." And then he looks, and nobody's moving at all. And he says, "Indeed, what stage of the process? Contemplative?" Like, I could so use that on a student. I'm almost done with my paper. Well, what stage are you at? Contemplative?
Yeah.
So good.
A lot of the banter between Watson and Holmes is great too. Like when Holmes takes and points the violin bow, or was it his cane?
No, it's
was it his
bow.
Cane or violin bow?
It's the violin bow.
He's like, I'll read it here, but get that out of my face. It's not in your face. It's in my hand. Get what's in your hand out of my face. Like, he's just so petty, and I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's eccentric in all the right ways, and Jude Law is so straight and narrow, and, like, you know, he's a military man, as they mention a couple different times. they work so perfectly.
That whole thing, I'm not going to quote the whole thing, but that first conversation that we get to see them have when he invites him to dinner. And it goes back and forth. It's like a ping pong term match. And then it gets to the end. And it's like, you wear a jacket. You wear a jacket. That one. He's just such a child.
I thought we decided it was too small on you. You decided. Or, you know, in another life, you'd have made an excellent criminal. Yes.
Yep.
And you, sir, an excellent policeman. Like,
so the little Lestrade. Jabs. Oh, yeah, it's so
little
good.
Jabs at Lestrade.
Yeah. Ah, I love that stuff.
I can't separate Robert Downey Jr. From Sherlock Holmes and Tony Stark. Like, I feel like he must be somewhere a mixture, maybe not quite as witty as Sherlock, but
yeah.
I feel like he's got to be a mixture of those two characters.
Yeah. He plays smartass too well to not be highly intelligent.
Yes.
Like, he often plays a very smart character.
I think this is, I said this to you before, so maybe we'll have some viewers disagree. Maybe we can put this on the socials. This is probably, in my opinion, Robert Downey Jr.'s best role. Maybe not his best movie, but his best role.
Yeah.
Followed closely by Dr. Doolittle. Just kidding.
Well, I just remember when I saw him playing Tony Stark, I was like, oh, he's playing himself. That just kind of felt like when you see him in interviews, and even now, like, it just feels like that's who he is. Where this is turned up to 11, English accent. I mean, that's a pretty big, and you know, a big, pretty big commitment. And I, as an American, think it's a good accent, but I've heard several English actors say also that it's on point. So,
oh yeah, that's good, because I wouldn't know a good accent if I heard one.
Yeah, so. I know movie accents, I think, but yeah, I would not consider myself an expert.
And then, kind of moving along with, I guess, performances. The fellow that plays Lord Blackwood, Mark Strong.
Love him.
I love him as a villain.
Yep.
He is fantastic. He's like sullen and devious without even speaking. Ah, I think he's great. I used to work at T-Mobile for a long time, and I had a customer once that looked just like Mark Strong, and I was slightly scared every time I interacted with him. Like, I just I couldn't interact with the guy. He does this. Mark Strong is also in Robin Hood with I'd always forget that guy's name. Javert from Les Mis. What's his name?
In Robin Russell Crowe?
Russell Crowe, thank you.
It's on my list. I gotta watch that one. I didn't want to jump ahead, but dang, is he bad?
He's the bad guy in that, and he plays a really good bad guy. And then is he also in Ocean's 11? Is that him?
No, that's Andy Garcia. There's some similarities there. No, but he played Sinestro in Green Lantern. Was probably, I know you're gonna hate to say this because big Ryan Reynolds fan you are, probably the best thing in that movie. He's a really good Sinestro, and that is, and then to get to see his turn, that's a thing. I'm sad that we didn't actually see.
Oh, it is Andy Garcia. Andy Garcia looks a little bit like Mark Strong.
A little bit.
I get that mixed up.
He's also in Shazam too. He's the bad guy in Shazam. He's Dr.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah,
that's probably what you're thinking of.
I liked Green Lantern. I thought that was a fine movie.
Not I like it movie, too.
But doesn't deserve the hate. I was entertained. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not great, but it's not bad. I will say, just kind of tying it back to performance a little bit, Blackwood's, he pretty much never blinks. He does a couple of times, but he kind of just has that steely-eyed stare, and his eyes are so dark, and they...
Ooh. Yeah,
I think that was a big part of his performance, that he just was kind of unnerving in the way that he would just bore holes in you with a stare.
Yeah, he doesn't do, like, he's not going to win any awards for this. Well, I mean, it's been quite some time, so obviously not. But, I don't feel like he acted his little heart out, but he played the role incredibly well. He didn't need to go crazy with it, and props to him.
No, you know what? That's a good point. I think that's a really good point. He's not, like, mustache twirling. He's kind of minimalist in what he's doing,
mm-hmm.
and therefore more menacing with his voice and everything. It's not over the top. It's kind of understated, if anything.
Exactly.
There's tons there. You could be chewing scenery left and right, but I think that works. It also works really well because, like, you're not going to be competing in that regard with Downey, right? Because Downey's chewing scenery all over the place. You don't need two guys doing
it. Yeah, maybe that's why Jude Law makes such a good Watson too, because he's. He is very reserved. He is the anchor to Robert Downey Jr.'s Holmes.
Yeah, just the stares he gives him. Just I can't believe you're doing that again. That kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you can tell he is ready to be out of that relationship. He is ready to move on.
Yeah, that's...
But he loves it.
Yeah. We talked, as far as costumes, just kind of wrapping up here, like, it's been described as a more bohemian style for Holmes, whereas the traditional thing, he's much more buttoned down, very formal. No deerstalker hat, obviously. You mentioned the tooth, which is great. I thought that's kind of subtle, but also really creepy, especially when you zoom in on it. But I like also that we got to see Holmes doing disguises a couple times, kind of like he says the hobo with the false nose and whatnot. Doctor disguise was kind of a little thing he did.
The hobo with the false nose, I kind of went off on like a mental tangent while watching this. Is Holmes a lot like the Joker in Dark Knight Returns? Where you can never really tell if he is intentionally doing a lot of these things or he is just like a crazed lunatic that happens to pull everything together at the end. Because when he originally goes and chases Adler after she leaves his home for the first time and she runs to the carriage with Moriarty, he falls out of the window into a bunch of soot and gets like black soot all over his face.
Yeah.
And then later that's just part of his costume.
Yep.
So I'm like, did he do that on purpose or did he have a happy accident and just went with it? And so much of this movie is that. Like, is he a genius or is he just a clumsy idiot that pulls it together at the last minute?
Well, I mean, other than the nose, doesn't he like pretty much puts it together as he's walking?
Yeah, as he's walking. Yeah, he's just grabbing stuff off tables.
Be great.
Yeah, the disguises were great. I like how in the second one, I know this isn't about the second one, but in the second one, he puts together a couple disguises that are obviously pretty trash, and he'll like draw attention to the fact that he's like, it's not my best disguise, I know.
Yeah. Yes, on the train. Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm going to need to rewatch that now. We'll talk a little
bit about that. Not as good as the first. Still solid, but not as good as the first, in my opinion.
Agreed. So moving on to setting design, this was another Oscar nomination. In this case, lost to Avatar, which I thought was interesting since most of Avatar is digital. But, I mean, I guess production design is production design.
Oh, yeah. Are we counting digital? I guess you got to count digital. Okay. Yeah.
It's still a whole lot of work, whether they're on location or not. This was, unlike Avatar, on location a lot in and around London, which I was kind of fascinated and glad to hear. So a lot of real world locations, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I was actually surprised on, I mean, there was, for the city scenes, there was a lot of CGI, maybe too much, like, or maybe not enough good CGI, I feel. Like, that was a little jarring for me. And I don't know if it would have been in 2009, but today I'm just like, oh, that looks really fake. Sure. But in terms of, like, actual set pieces and actual pieces of scenery on location, I was surprised how well it worked with looking old. Mm-hmm. Like, how many of those shots they were able to get where you're like, oh, I wouldn't even know that was, you know, modern day London or whatever it may be. They did a really good job. And I mean, like you said earlier, it's got like that Zack Snyder dingy dark color filter on it, which I think probably lends to that quite a bit. Lends to that feeling of, okay, this is actually old style England.
Yeah. Which, like, as you're saying that too, I'm thinking about like the Tower Bridge, which is obviously CGI, that does feel a little bit different than most of the city scenes because of the fact that it's not a real world location. So that's a good pull. I had to look up real fast who the cinematographer was. Philippe Russolo, who also did the first two Fantastic Beasts movies. So that actually makes a lot of sense. When you look at, visually kind of the dingy and, you know, it's older times, which is interesting. He also did, let's see, he won an Academy Award for River Runs Through It. Did an Interview with a Vampire, so that kind of fits too. A couple other things, some Tim Burton films and Constantine, which is a favorite of mine. Especially if Constantine 2 actually does come to fruition. It's an underrated Keanu Reeves movie, in my opinion.
Is it underrated?
I think so. I think it's a good time.
No, I think it's a good movie. I feel like it's pretty well rated.
I think maybe it's over time it's held up pretty well. Whereas when it came out, like, critically, it didn't do that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's what I'm going
with. I'm going to jump back a little bit.
Yeah, please.
To, like, costume and design. Because I'm realizing is what will make or break a movie for me very, very quickly is the costume and design. And this movie just does a fantastic job of making everything feel very lived in. They don't feel like costumes. They feel like those are the clothes those people wear. Like, they got sweat and dirt and grime. And I'm looking at some of the other movies this costume designer did. Her name is Jenny Beavan. Mad Max Fury Road, which also fantastic costume design. Cruella, fantastic costume design. Oh, sure. Doolittle, haven't seen that one.
I did. And Christopher Robin. Design is fine.
Yeah, like she does.
Christopher Robin, that's pretty great. Costume design. That's beautiful.
She's doing a good job. I think I need to start paying attention to who's doing that more often because they don't get enough credit for what they do.
They really, really do.
I'm trying to think of a movie that I couldn't get into. It's one we talked about recently. I couldn't get into it because the costumes all felt so fake. They felt like obvious costumes. It'll come to me. I can't think of it.
Well, I like what you said too. And so I'm going to throw out a sports ball reference, Justin, but offensive linemen.
Oh,
football.
No.
I know. That's the thing with offensive linemen. The only time you notice those guys that are protecting the quarterback in American football is when they do something wrong. Like, they're doing their job right, you don't even notice, which I think is an apt parallel to a costume designer. Like, it's seamless. And I 100% agree. Like, it feels lived in with the stuff. That's great. That fits really good with set decoration and all that good stuff as well. Some props I did want to pull out attention to. Obviously, Holmes's violin is important. That's a thing that he uses in the book, so that was cool to get to see him doing that and doing it in a couple of interesting ways, like with the flies and sticking it in the bow in Watson's face. The unrolling, he has that unrolling tool pouch, like a utility belt almost. He's almost like Batman with that thing. Which I don't know if I'd ever paid close attention to it when I wasn't looking specifically for props that to pull up, and like he pulls that out a couple times. That's pretty cool. There's an arsonist
tool belt. One of the
yeah, go for it.
Sorry, one of the best scenes in that movie is when he is picking the lock to get into the lab, and then Watson just comes up behind him, kicks the door in like that. It was in all the trailers, so of course it's gonna be a great movie or great scene. But I love that.
Another thing that's in the trailers is the little hammer versus the giant hammer, where he throws the little hammer, Dredger bounces off of him. And Dredger's just like clocking out, just taking out the supports so the boat floats up. Yeah, and I have to mention the Rorden, the ginger midget, Rorden's radio transmitter, which turns out to be actually really, really important because that's what Moriarty's all about. That's what Irene Adler steals at the very end. And of course, Watson.
No, she steals the like the poison at the very end, right?
Are you sure it's not the transmitter? Because that's what he was.
No, yeah, she steals the poison as a distraction for Moriarty to go steal the transmitter.
Oh, that's right. My bad. No, you're right. That's the red herring. She's taking that so that he can come in later and get it.
Wait, and then what did Moriarty use the transmitter for? Does he use that in the second one? I don't think so.
It's been a while since I've revisited that, but we can just assume that he's going to use it for nefarious purposes very, very soon. So, yeah, listeners, if you know, anyway, like, go ahead and chime in and let us, especially if we miss details, like when Justin keeps calling it The Dark Knight Returns, when it's called The Dark Knight. Feel free to chime in. Here's the thing. I screwed up just a few seconds ago. You see, the thing is this.
I'm going to defend this. I have a hard time with Batman movie names. I don't know what it is about that franchise, but I cannot name them. And I thought, I'm going to be a man this time, and I'm going to call it Batman Returns. Wait, Dark Knight Returns? What's it called?
It's just called The Dark Knight. You want the one with Heath Ledger?
That's just The Dark Knight?
It's just The Dark Knight.
So what's the third one called?
The Dark Knight Rises.
There is no Dark Knight Returns?
There is Dark Knight Returns, but that is a comic book by Frank Miller that they did do some animated versions of that. So there is a film.
Oh, they're animated. Yeah. Well, I decided to be a man and use the real name, but apparently I got the name wrong. I'm so embarrassed.
See, we get to talk about Zack Snyder, though. That's the mech suit that Ben Affleck is wearing. That's pulled from that in Batman v Superman. So,
great film. I'm sorry. That is only the third mistake I've ever made in my life. So, I'm glad you are all here to witness that.
Hey, I just got the wrong thing that Irene Adler stole. So. The last thing I want to say about props is I love that they have Watson's notes, just because I forget that actually all of Sherlock Holmes' stories are written as if Watson is the writer. He's telling that this is our adventure that we did this. And I love the fact that it's in first person. I don't generally like first person, but I love it in this regard. So you can really get firsthand account. This is what Holmes is doing right now, just a few minutes ago.
Is there a thing from the books that, okay, so right at the beginning, after they catch Blackwood for the first time, they go to take a picture and Sherlock covers his face right before the picture. Is that something from the books? Does he not like his photograph taken or something?
I don't remember. That's a good question. I love that title sequence.
Maybe. Yeah. Which apparently Guy Ritchie is like kind of known for his cool title sequences. I did not know that until I studied up on Guy Ritchie quite a bit.
Yeah. I hope we have a great one for the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
I was actually looking at his other films, Guy Ritchie's other films, and I don't know that I really like any of them.
Yeah. Well, we got Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, Snatch, Aladdin, live-action Aladdin. That just feels like out of left field, right?
Yeah, I didn't like that. I was excited for The Man from U.N.C.L.E., didn't enjoy that. Like, I think this is really his only movie that I like.
He did the first two.
High hopes for Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
I have high hopes for that as well, the trailer. Not kind of the part for me. Characters, obviously we've talked about Downey and Jude Law at length. Mark Strong, of course. Rachel McAdams, should call her out as Irene Adler. She's quite good in this, I think. I like Kelly Riley as Mary Morstan. I know you don't like Kelly Riley at all, but that's fine. Eddie Marsden as Inspector Lestrade. Yeah, you are. That's fine. I like Eddie Marsden.
She's always played off as like this great beauty, but oh man.
It's in the eye of the beholder,
It looks
Justin.
like It looks like someone like resuscitated her, but after she was dead for like 8 months. She's like, oh, so CPR finally worked. She's only slightly decomposed. Like, oh, I don't know.
Wow. Mm-mm. Of course. Mm-mm. Yeah, I'm not going to throw you under the bus. We'll move on. All right. I thought what was interesting is, and it's weird. So Andrew Jack is the voice of Professor Moriarty. He is a voice actor and also played, what's his name? He's in Force Awakens. Amat, I think, is his last name. He's the old guy with the kind of the mullet that's in the scene where they're talking about going to destroy Starkiller Base. And of course, he's replaced by Jared Harris. It's not Jared Harris.
Jared Harris doesn't do the voice?
He does not in the original one. From my research, it said that he has redubbed his lines for later home media releases and television broadcasts. But I watched this on the digital version. I would have assumed it would have been updated for that, and it was not. It was still Andrew Jackson.
Oh.
I was like, I want to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, when I watched it, I was surprised because it was... what's Moriarty's name in the second one? The actor's name?
Jared Harris.
Jared Harris. I was surprised that it was his voice. I'm like, oh, that they'd already cast this by the time the first one came around. But he redubbed them, you say.
Yeah, I would like to hear that version. I'm sure it's probably on YouTube or whatever. Yeah, it's like putting Ian McDiarmid into Empire Strikes Back. I like Jared Harris. Big fan of his from Fringe.
I don't like it when they do that. I don't like it when they go back and change movies. Keep them how they are.
Okay. What does our audience think, I wonder? We should ask that.
Yeah.
Moving down to...
I'm actually curious.
Yeah, I am legit curious. Hero's Journey? Nope. Doesn't fit.
No, he's firmly in the camp of I'm a hero. Right from the get-go.
He's fully formed, which again was just kind of going back to my earlier point about you'd think if it's the first in a series that maybe it's early in his career, but being super late in his career, I thought was... Like, really at the end of the career, at least is how it's set up, I thought was kind of an interesting take.
Well, if this is going along with the books, and it is supposed to be from Watson's perspective, no, he doesn't really fit Hero's Journey either. He is reluctant, but he doesn't...
Not everything does, and that's fine.
I was trying to force it.
Round pick. But I did put, as far as world building, that this, it feels fully developed, this world does, because he's been doing this so long. That it's always interesting, I think, to drop him in media res. I think that's actually probably more interesting than seeing another origin story. I mean, if you're interested, there is a movie out there called Young Sherlock Holmes, which I loved. I think that's 1985. First instance of CGI, where you actually see at boarding school where Holmes meets Watson for the first time. I love that movie so very much. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think it still holds up because period pieces, I think, tend to hold up pretty stinking well. They don't over rely on special effects or anything.
How do you feel this compares to the BBC Sherlock Holmes with Benedict Cumberbatch?
I love them both. I think they're just very different animals. I mean, I do love Benedict Cumberbatch, Sherlock Holmes. He's such an a-hole. You know, a high-functioning sociopath. He does sociopath. Play a good a-hole. Right, I think that's what he is and what he calls himself. It's been a while since I've watched
it. I'm going to steal this from you, Craig. But it was a missed opportunity when, again, stealing this from you, the MCU, when they met Doctor Strange and Iron Man, and they didn't make a Sherlock Holmes reference.
Yeah.
What are you doing, writers? What are you doing?
It's right there. That's kind of silly. They introduce them, like they literally introduce themselves to each other, and they don't do that. Sure,
he could have even just said, "Yeah, like no, duh, Sherlock," or something.
That would have been it, right there. Boom. Yeah, as self-referential as the MCU had been, that's a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
So, Justin, final thoughts on Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, I mean, what else is there to say? It's great. I think it's going to age super well. It has aged super well. I think I don't want to say a lot of movies because I can't really think of any, but I'm sure the cinematography part, especially the slow motion speed ramps, I feel like has been tried and we still get some movies doing. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any, but I know I've seen them. And I'm happy. I love it. I love those things. They're a lot of fun. I wish we got more voiceover narrations, especially in movies of highly intelligent people, to kind of bring the audience along for the ride. So I wish this movie would have had like a bigger effect on the like the cultural aspect of movies moving forward, because I think it's a gem and I think it's awesome. And I will continue to watch it for years to come.
Nice.
Except for Kelly Riley.
Wow. One more dig. Okay. Yeah, just to kind of build off of what you just said, I would have liked to see more of that too. And I'm thinking, I had to look it up real fast. Have you ever seen the TV show Psych?
Yes.
Okay. Because that, as you're going through, you see what he's observing. That's 2006. Oh, yeah. So yeah, it came out before this. I thought maybe it would have been, you know, influenced by that. And then also the first season of CW's The Flash actually had that quite a bit as well. They went away from that. But I like enjoyed watching that kind of stuff, to see smart people notice stuff and to show us that. I don't think that you necessarily have to hold all that and then, oh yeah, here's the 17 things I noticed that you could have noticed if you really, you know, you could lead me through some of that stuff. Like, my brain doesn't work that fast, right?
Yeah.
Know what to look for.
Well, and I feel like that would work. It would work much better in a shorter form. Like, if it was a TV episode, it was 30, 45 minutes or something. You can do that. You can give a big reveal at the end. But for a really long movie, nah, walk us through it as you're doing it.
Yeah.
More so.
I mean, you could even just say, like, I noticed this thing, and not tell me what the relevance of that is.
Yeah, there you go.
And then later on be like, here's why those things are important. I mean, he does that. Holmes does that kind of stuff anyway. What I will say is that I love how this directly leads into a sequel that sets it up with Moriarty and all that stuff. And so my biggest thing is the second one, even more so, ends on a cliffhanger where we think he's dead, but he's not. And Holmes, or Watson rather, doesn't know that he's alive. And we're still waiting on a third movie. And it's just been in development hell for so long. And it's like, there's money on the table. Just make the film. Please. Yeah.
It's listed on IMDb, but it has like nothing there.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. It feels like, yeah, I mean, I know obviously Downey was busy with Iron Man for a long, long time, but his schedule is lightened up. Like, and you know, I think we've had this conversation. Yeah, it doesn't really matter what age, you know, he plays Holmes. Like, he could play Holmes at 70. Like, it doesn't have to be in his prime or whatever. Like, just make the film. Nobody's aged out.
Yeah.
Even, you know, you might not be able to get Kelly Riley back, and that might make you. She's a big star now. So.
Oh, someone could resuscitate her. Dig her right back up.
Sorry, Kelly Riley. Sorry. Sorry, Kelly Riley fans.
Oh, like, she listens, please.
She might. You don't know.
Pop in her hearing aid and I don't know. I got her ears work.
Sorry, English listeners. Oh, God.
Oh, apologize for me. I mean what I say.
Okay. Let's get out of here. As we close, though, we do want to thank you so much for listening. We do. And for putting up with our stuff. If you'd like to connect with us and let us know when we're right or wrong, you can find us on X and Facebook. Of course, email us at readingbetweenreels@gmail.com. Or you could use the SpeakPipe app on our website, and we'll play your voice on the episode. If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend and support us by writing a review on your favorite podcast catch. Justin, our next episode is a review of Blade Runner 2049. We're going to talk
Blade Runner. I freaking love that movie.
I love it too.
No negative comments about that.
You missed Blade Runner, but we're back for Blade Runner 2049. So please send us an email or voicemail about your favorite moments from Blade Runner 2049, and we'll share it on the next episode.